From the newsrooms of WBUR and GBH, I'm Yasmeen Ammer, in this week for Paris Alston. Welcome to Consider This from Boston, where in 2019, Boston police arrested a Black driver named Al Copeland after he suffered a stroke while driving and pulled over on a busy road. Instead of calling an ambulance right away, police assumed he was drunk. They arrested him and left him in a holding cell for hours before finally sending him to the hospital. As WBUR's Ali Jarmaning first reported last week, the city of Boston quietly agreed to a $1.3 million legal settlement last year. And she joins us now to tell us about it. Ali, thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
So, Ali, tell us more about what happened that night in 2019.
Yeah, so Al Copeland was driving on Mass Ave in Boston when he started to feel nauseous. And he was so nauseous, he decided he had to stop driving right away. And here's why he told me he decided to pull over right in front of the Berklee College of Music.
Because I was afraid, I say, well, at least if anything happened to me, somebody will find me.
And so, of course, someone did find him. It was the Boston police. By that point, Al was slumped over in his car and barely conscious. But instead of calling an ambulance, the cops arrested him. They assumed he was drunk. They wrote in their report that they smelled alcohol, even though Al says he hasn't had a drink since 1995. His wife, Valerie, suspects she knows why.
Why they didn't assume he was sick? I can only, and I strongly believe, it's because he's a Black male. I think if he had been a 62-year-old white man passed out in front of Berklee School of Music, I think they would have called an ambulance.
Ah, so his wife is convinced that this was racism from the Boston police. And what happened next, Ali?
Well, that kicked off a series of errors that night that ultimately led to a $1.3 million settlement with the city. And that's one of the largest of its kind in recent years. After Al was arrested and taken to the police station, he could barely stand. When officers left him to use the bathroom in a holding cell, he fell to the ground and banged his head on the wall, according to police records. And then officers left him in the cell to, quote, sleep it off, the records show. It was only after Al threw up, that's 5 hours after the police first encountered him, that officers called an ambulance.
You know, I just can't help but think about the type of damage that can be done in that situation, a medical emergency where every single minute counts.
Right. Valerie, she says she's watched all 5 hours of the footage captured at the police station that night.
I've seen all of the footage of when he was in the jail cells for 5 hours to see how uncaring they were. Unfortunately, it should be shocking, but it's not.
And it didn't get any better when Al got to Tufts Medical Center. Police records show that medical providers there also assumed Al was drunk and left him in the emergency room for 7 more hours. It was only when Valerie finally tracked down her husband that doctors confirmed he had no drugs or alcohol in his system. He wasn't drunk. He'd had a stroke. But by then, the damage was done. Al had to remain in the hospital for weeks and then move to rehab. He had to give up his job with the MBTA. And he's still having trouble walking or even enjoying a meal.
I'm not a bit with my balance, my attitude, my appetite, tasting food. And some cognitive things that are still happening, you know, and some physical things.
Al is now 64, and he doesn't remember anything about that night in April 2019. His first memory is waking up at Spalding Rehab 2 months later.
So, Ali, it really sounds like Al is suffering these really terrible long-term consequences as a result of police and hospital neglect. But what happened to the police officers involved in this?
So the department did do an investigation only after the Copeland's attorney contacted them. But the department didn't fault the officers for assuming Al was drunk. Instead, they cited them for leaving him alone briefly in the cell and allowing him to fall. And the three officers haven't yet been disciplined, and that's even though the investigation was completed more than a year ago.
And Ali, something else I really want to know is how did you even find out about this story?
Yeah, so the city last summer paid out the settlement to avoid a lawsuit, and legal filings are how we normally hear about these kinds of things. But I found a note about this case and a list of payments made to deal with police misconduct allegations. And this is a document I ask for on a regular basis from the city. And I was surprised to see Al's name, which I didn't recognize, and the settlement amount, which was pretty significant. And that led me to request more records from the city and then reach out to Al and Valerie. And I should say, they were reluctant to talk to me. They really value their privacy, and they thought with the settlement last year that they were putting this whole thing behind them. But they agreed to talk in part because they hope what happened to Al will lead to change in the department.
And there you go. If you don't know Allie Germanning, she is a public records queen. And now even the mayoral candidates are talking about this, right?
Right. It's the kind of conversation Al and Valerie were hoping to prompt. Both mayoral candidates say it's unacceptable how Boston police treated him. City Councilor Anissa Asaibi-George calls it a tragedy. She says the city should have disclosed the incident at the time and must provide more information now. City Councilor Michelle Wu, she says it speaks to the need to root out and eradicate racial bias in the city. Valerie, for her part, is glad the candidates are talking about her husband's treatment, but she wishes they would provide more concrete plans to make sure it never happens again.
They can treat this as a one-off. They can treat it as something that they just have to respond to until they get to City Hall. Or they can let this be an opportunity to really figure out what went wrong and ensure that something like this does not happen on their watch.
And acting Boston Mayor Kim Janey's office declined to comment on Al's case other than to say that the settlement came under the previous administration.
That's WBUR senior reporter Allie Germanning. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Before we go, here's what else is up. As the pandemic continues, millions of dollars in state and federal assistance are still available for people struggling to make rent. Jeff Landis is with the tenant advocacy organization Metro Housing, and he says the aid could help cover lots of costs.
Paying back rent, paying utilities, even if they're moving and need help with those upfront moving costs.
Landlords, who say the pandemic has affected them as well, are also eligible to apply for rental assistance on behalf of their tenants. In other news, MBTA staff are out surveying riders this week. They're asking them about changes they want to see in the T's bus network. Caroline Van Ness is the T's manager of transit planning.
We are specifically focusing on prioritizing travel by low-income riders and communities of color and really trying to improve services for those populations in particular.
Van Ness says the T already knows that riders want more consistent bus service throughout the day, not just during the pre-pandemic morning and afternoon peak hours. Meanwhile, in Worcester, the Texas-based owner of St. Vincent Hospital is unilaterally imposing a contract on nurses who've been on strike for the past 7 months. But the union representing the striking workers says that contract is illegal. The Massachusetts Nursing Association says it wants all striking nurses to get their old jobs back, but management says that won't be possible. St. Vincent CEO Carolyn Jackson says management has already made job commitments to some of their replacement nurses.
They bravely took their roles in the middle of a strike and a pandemic. But we've also committed to the MNA that we will have a job for every striking nurse who wants to return.
Federal regulators are investigating union complaints made against the hospital's administration. And finally, the Red Sox are back at Fenway tonight for Game 3 of the American League Championship Series against the Houston Astros. Right now, the series is tied at one game apiece, so whoever wins the best of seven, ALCS, will head to the World Series. Seats at Fenway aren't the only big seller for the Red Sox right now. Scott Sacklid, who runs the Sox team store, says their new yellow jersey has become wildly popular.
It's like the hottest thing I've seen in years. It's just brand new. It's exciting. People are buying into it, and it's new.
Okay, and for the record, I like the yellow jerseys. Boston needs some more bright colors. Am I right? From the newsrooms of WBUR and GBH, I'm Yasmeen Ammer. Paris Alston will be back behind the mic in a couple of weeks. See you again tomorrow. Hey there. A lot of people listen to Consider This at the end of the day, and NPR's up first in the morning. But a lot of actual news happens in the middle of the day, and the team bringing you the best information about that news as it happens is the team behind WBUR and NPR's show Here and Now. And yes, there is a podcast version. So want more of the best news reporting from public radio around the country? Check out Here and Now. Find it in the same place you found this podcast. Wherever you listen, just search Here and Now.